Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's 5 at 5
with Molly and Hall,
where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Molly Hall. 5 at 5 with Molly and Hall starts now.
In a pre-draft conference call, Bears GM Ryan Pace was once again asked about picking up the option on quarterback Mitchell Trubisky's contract and once again demurred, despite being less than 2 weeks away from decision day. Pace claimed his focus is on the draft. Will he pick up the just under $25 million price tag on Trubisky, even if it's only guaranteed due to injury? And would you?
Oh, boy, I got to tell you, it's a lot of money. And you think about the amount of money they have already invested next year. They got a lot of big contracts. The very fact that he keeps hesitating to say anything, I don't understand why you're pushing it right up to the date. I'm not quite sure what that means, but I think it means that they may decide to let Mitch kind of play it out and see what happens. It obviously isn't a great vote of confidence. I think you could easily pick up the option and then do with Leonard Floyd with him next year, obviously barring injury. So you got to ask yourself, is it worth the risk of injury? And I don't know why it takes you months to ask yourself that. The more that this goes on, the less likely it is that Mitch will get that year picked up. And again, that year, it's almost $25 million. Basically, it's the transition tag from this year, which even if it was the $25 million, he'd be like the 17th highest paid quarterback, something in that range. So if he's your starter, then I suppose it's okay. But at this point, it doesn't seem like they're doing it, David. It seems like they're like Tim Floyd answering a question. They're in a four-corner stall.
Oh, they're still talking some more, a little defensive there. Look, last night, I think ESPN got even. They treated Chicago, it was on ESPN, right? They treated Chicago Sunday night to the last dance. Last night was the big stumble, the 2017 draft. They reminded everybody about what Ryan Pace did and what he didn't do in moving up to draft Mitch Trubisky. They're still paying for that mistake. And I think what happened yesterday, Molly, look, and this could go the other way, but you talk to some people and everyone's got a little bit of maybe a different take on this. But mine is that this is just delaying bad news. They don't want to deliver until they actually absolutely have to. I'm under no illusions that they're committed to Mitch Trubisky. I think that they made that determination when they went out and got Nick Foles. You can talk about the open competition and the ruse and under the guise of having, you know, a real quarterback, you know, situation here where may the best man win. But I think the best man will win, and they've already sort of figured out who they want to win. This is Nick Foles' season. Not to go all Mike Glennon on you, but this is, you know, this is his year. Mitch Trubisky's time, I think they're closer to making the determination that he's closer to bust than boom. And they have until May 4th. To me, them not making a decision is an indication they've already made it. Because if they wanted to do this, it would be so easy to do this. And I'm not sure what they're waiting for, except for the Bears' MO is to delay bad news until you have to deliver it as long as possible. And I think they're waiting until they have to make a determination. But I don't expect that to happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is, David. I think you're right. They know what they are going to do. They know what they want to do, but they have this deadline set, so in their minds, they don't have to do anything until the exact last minute. And I can get behind procrastination. I'm a big fan of it as well. I love pushing things off and trying to ignore that other certain things are going to occur. But then at some point, that day does arrive where you do have your back up against the wall and you have to make the decision, and they're not going to pick up this option. They'd be crazy to. Unless Nick Foles, who I believe will be the starter this year, unless he does suffer a long-term injury and Mitch gets another opportunity and turns into a guy that we haven't seen. You know, it's been in the league for, what, 4 years now, and we're acting like, some people are acting like there's another level where he just needs to, you know, have a little bit more time, or he needs more weapons, or the line needs to be better. Listen, he can't play, all right? And if they would be nuts to pick up this option unless some miracle happens where some football spirit enters the body of Mitchell Trubisky and makes him a decent quarterback, they're not picking up this option.
No, they are. Pace will not pick up the option on Trubisky. And would I, if I was in Pace's position, I wouldn't either. Because the bottom line is, Mitchell Trubisky hasn't earned it. It's to the point that you have to bring in an old veteran quarterback who's won a Super Bowl to compete for the job. This was supposed to be your franchise quarterback, and he hasn't been that. So the bottom line is no, Ryan Pace shouldn't, he won't, and if I was him, I wouldn't either.
No, he shouldn't, and I think he's saying that he's not going to by answering it and dealing with it the way he has. They brought in Mike Glennon. Mike Glennon restructured his contract to give the Bears a little bit more cabbage during this offseason. There's no... If Mitchell Trubisky's...
Foles.
If this... I'm sorry?
Nick Foles.
What about...
They brought in Nick Foles.
I know. Okay.
You said Mike Glennon.
You said Mike Glennon.
Okay.
I knew that.
I mean, are we the McNeil and Parkinshaw all of a sudden? Are we going
to
play gotcha?
No, I just wanted to make sure that you.
Okay, I got it.
No, I just wanted to make.
Okay, move along. Move along.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
Jerry Angelo, I mean, Ryan Pace revealed little on Tuesday, but conceded the limited offseason programs due to COVID-19 meant the Bears are looking for guys with a high football IQ. What does that mean to you? Is it more or less important than physical gifts or strong character, in your opinion?
I really was just pointing out that we had mentioned Glennon before. I knew what you meant. I just want to make sure everybody else did. I don't know what Pace... I think that yesterday reminded me of the feeling I had postseason press conference when he was talking about his plans for the offseason and Mitch is a starter, etc. Sometimes these things are put together just for the sole purpose of it's very obligatory. They're perfunctory. They're talking because the league requires them to do so. And so when you say things like you want guys with a high football IQ, of course you do. It doesn't matter if your offseason program is 4 months, 4 weeks, 4 days, or 4 hours. I mean, you always want to get guys with a high football IQ, and that doesn't change their draft board. You're always balancing that with the physical gifts and the strong character and all the things that you do in the process of evaluating prospects. So I don't think it changes much at all. What it does is maybe the off-season situation, the compressed training camp and all the things about not having OTAs, that may factor into a free agent being able to assimilate himself into your program quickly, like Nick Foles, like the quarterback. But I just don't know that it's going to affect how you make a draft decision, because you're drafting guys not based on just what they're going to deliver you next year, but over, and if you're lucky, the next 3 to 5 to 7 years if they stick around. So you're not letting that dictate who you draft and when you draft them. You're just saying something because you have to fill the time, because this press conference, you're asked questions about what are you looking for and you don't want to reveal anything.
That truer words never spoken. I don't know why they even bother putting it. I mean, if you did it a week early, maybe the guy would reveal something. So that's kind of a problem. I guess that's what they're worried about. No, that's meaningless to me. Yeah, we all want full IQ. That's great. But you know what? If Henry Ruggs drops to the Bears at 43, I think you're looking at the 40 time. You're not looking at the IQ, his understanding of the game. Well, you know, I didn't like the way he cut off that one route as he was blowing by three guys trying to defend him. Yeah, it's these are meaningless words. It's like the guy has got football character. You know, what does that mean? Well, he hits the gym. Again, that's nice, but shouldn't that be a requirement? Shouldn't football intelligence, and listen, we've seen a lot of dumb players, and I get it. You can lose games by making mistakes as much as you can win them by not making mistakes. But my goodness gracious, that's just words.
Can we check on Ryan Pace's football IQ? I think that would be something I'd be curious to see, because he hasn't really shown much of one in the last 5 years since he's been here. I think that, listen, you want every player on your roster to have an understanding of the game on a basic level and of the playbook and of the schemes that you're trying to run. I think that all goes without saying. Listen, Ryan Pace, we've talked about this before. Every time he speaks, we all kind of, you know, we have to pay attention to it because he's the general manager of the Bears, but he never really says a damn thing, does he? It was more of the same yesterday. It's just, it was a little more garbled because it was over a teleconference. And it's just, at this point, whatever he says, it's hard for me to really invest in any of it because he just kind of rambles on. He's kind of like Tim Floyd in that sense, where he'll just kind of ramble on for seemingly hours at a time without ever really getting to the point whatsoever. Yes, you would like a guy with a high football IQ, but if I'm making the choice, I would prefer a guy who can catch the ball or get to the quarterback or intercept a pass or contribute on the field. That's always much more important.
I'm going to choose to read between the lines on this comment from Ryan Pace here, because when I heard this, my immediate thought was, this is a little bit of an admission from Ryan Pace that he really screwed up the 2017 draft by taking Trubisky, a guy that doesn't have a high football IQ, that can't read defenses. And now there is more an emphasis on his part of taking guys with high football IQ, because sure, Mitchell Trubisky has strong character and he's a hardworking guy and he's a good team guy. And he is physically gifted. He's great on his feet. But it's the football IQ part that seems to be the issue here. So to me, this was a little bit of an admission here from Pace.
These are all buzzwords that Ryan Pace likes to use. He's got a thesaurus of words and terms to use when he sits down with the media and talks. I mean, the follow-up should have been, how are you going to test for high football IQ? I mean, is the Wunderlich more important? Is that, I mean, where are they getting the answers to know if somebody has a high football IQ during these times? I mean, of course, it's a buzzword. Ooh, I'm all hot and bothered in all the right spots. They're looking for high football IQ guys. Great. Fantastic. Way to go, Ryan. Get some more gel. Your hair is out of place.
I'm not done yet. I'm going to finish this question.
In a stunning move, or was it that surprising at all in retrospect, tight end Rob Gronkowski will join Tom Brady and the Buccaneers after a trade with the Patriots. As Gronk returns from retirement, the question now becomes, did he retire from the Patriots after the 2018 season, or did he do so just to escape Bill Belichick, and who won the trade?
Well, I think that Rob Gronkowski and Tom Brady have a great understanding. They have, you know, Tom has a weapon now that has a high football IQ. He is a guy that's going to go to the right spot and do the right thing, and Brady is going to feel comfortable throwing the ball to him. You know, one of the issues of Brady going down to Tampa was the idea that with no off-season program, with nothing like that, it would just take him a little longer to develop a rapport with all of his weapons. They have an embarrassment of riches down there. But the reality is that now he has a guy that has always been his safety valve. So he goes down there now with the guy that he has a safety valve with. So I think that's a huge win for the Buccaneers. I don't think the retirement, I think the guy was beat up like crazy. I think he retired because his body was letting him down. I mean, Gronk had surgery after surgery. how many arm surgeries has he had, right? And look, he had a back issue. He's had a lot of injuries and played through a lot of them. And obviously the Patriots have been a much better team. But I think that he said when he left that the only quarterback he was ever going to catch passes from was Tom Brady, because weren't they going to trade him to Detroit? They had a deal in place where he was going to go to Detroit, and he vetoed that, saying that Brady is the only quarterback he's ever going to play with. So he's being true to what he said. I don't know who won the trade. I think that, you know, you got to wait and see how this unfolds. And unfortunately, I would say the perception is that when you bring in two guys headed to the Hall of Fame, that it's a huge victory for Tampa. And if you're New England, you know the guy's not coming back. You did get another draft pick. You got a fourth round pick out of that. I mean, wouldn't the Bears love to have a fourth round pick? They got two in the second round, and then what? Then they wait till the fifth? A fourth round pick sounds great to me. So I don't know that we're going to ever say New England won that trade, but I do think that that this is less to do about Belichick and the system and more about the relationship between the two players.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I believe, though, that as physically beaten up as Gronkowski was at the end of that season when he decided to walk away, I think mentally you also wonder the wear and tear and just how worn down he might have been. And I think that's a product of a guy with his free spirit and his personality kind of acquiescing and changing to fit into the Bill Belichick structure for so long, and he did it so well. And I think maybe at the time he was as beaten down mentally as he was physically. And I'm reading a lot into that, but I believe that, you know, there was an element of walking away from that, and that contributed to it. He just couldn't see making another investment mentally and physically. It gave his body time to recover. Look, this is the baseball equivalent, the football equivalent of having, you know, Tom Brady's personal catcher. This is David Ross to John Lester. This is Gronk going to Tampa Bay for the guy that is the perfect complement to him and the only quarterback he's really ever known. And that makes a lot of sense from his perspective. He was not going to play anywhere else. And because of that reality, Mully, I think that the Patriots are eventually going to win this trade, no matter how good he is in Tampa. He was never going to play for them again. He was never going to play for anybody again. So they get a fourth-round bonus draft pick for a guy that was basically retired, and they could use that draft pick. Let's wait and see. Maybe we should answer this again down the road. Let's wait and see if they package this pick in a deal to move up for maybe Tua, maybe Gronk for Tua, and then you start to look at what they get out of that deal. So I think the Patriots win here. I think Belichick does it again because he wasn't going to get anything out of Gronkowski. And for the league, for NFL fans, it's win-win because this is tremendous theater down in Tampa.
Yeah, it'll be certainly must-see or must-follow at the very least whenever the Bucs are taking the field, David. I agree with you there. The results, I'm not really sure. Listen, it's hard to believe Rob Gronkowski is only 30 years old because he has, you know, gone through the ringer quite a bit with all of the injuries that he's gone through, particularly when you're talking about a back injury. You know, we all know how debilitating that can be. And he wasn't the same guy the last time we saw him. The last few seasons that he had, you know, he wasn't that prime era Rob Gronkowski. And then now you take both of these guys away, both Gronk and Brady, away from the evil genius Bill Belichick, who in my mind is the one who is most responsible for all of the success of the Patriots. I guess we'll probably learn a little bit more about that in this upcoming season as well, as now they've all been separated. But I think Belichick is the winner here, getting a fourth round pick. And you can say, no, it's just a fourth round pick. Listen, again, ask Ryan Pace. Draft picks are very valuable and people love them. That's why everybody comes knocking on Pace's door when they want a draft pick, because he loves giving them away. So I think, you know, Belichick was planning on coming into this season without Rob Gronkowski. That doesn't change, but now he's got a fourth-round pick, and the Bucs are probably going to go 8-8 with these guys.
Look, the only reason Gronk retired, it wasn't to get away from Bill Belichick or anything like that. It was he needed time away from the game of football, which he clearly is passionate about, clearly loves. But he had some quotes floating out there last summer where he said he needed to recover. He wasn't in a good place. He literally said football was bringing me down and I didn't like it. So, yeah, the toll from football was physical. The toll from football was mental. And that's what it was. He needed to step away. And this is what he did. And now he's rested. He's probably feeling a hell of a lot better. And he wants to play with Tom Brady, who won the trade. This was actually a win-win. I mean, you know, it's like you pointed out, David. Gronk was not going to come back to the Patriots. He was only going to play with Tom Brady. And so he was either, you know, going to follow Brady to Tampa Bay or not play at all. And so them getting a fourth round pick in the 2020 draft is definitely a win for the Patriots. The Buccaneers get their quarterback's favorite tight end. Everybody wins here.
Yeah, I agree with Ray. I think this is a win, and it's a win for everybody. It's a win for the NFL. It's a win for the Patriots. It's a win for Tom Brady. I think this will end up helping the brand that is Gronkowski. I think Gronk want, you know, he Kevin could answer this better, but he dove into the WWE. I think that's where he's going to end up after this. I think he wants to be in movies, but maybe all that stuff wasn't as available as he maybe thought it would be, and maybe he needed to go back to the NFL to do that. Now, I think if anything, it makes Belichick look like a guy who, after you win a couple rings and make some money, you're ready to get away from, because he makes football not fun. It's just very robotic, and it's always fun when you win, but when it's being robotic and you lose, then it's not as fun. But I think, you know, all this talk of O.J. Howard getting traded or thrown to the curb, I mean, he could get so much better with Tom Brady. So I don't know that the Bucs should get rid of him. I think that would be the mistake. I think, you know, O.J. Howard could win from this as well, because he could learn from Gronkowski and he could become a Gronk type. I mean, Gronk's not playing 2 years tops, right? If they have a really good year in Tampa, he's there for another year. But this is a 2 year thing, I think, at the most.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a question we're going to ask management here today.
Tony Kukoc told Casey Johnson he hoped the remainder of The Last Dance focused more on a celebration of basketball or who is guilty or to blame. Is there any chance of that happening, and is it possible to do both things?
I'm not sure. I think we should get Tim Floyd on the phone and maybe ask him a little bit later what he thinks.
No,
if that's possible.
No.
Okay, all right. I liked what Tony Kukoc said to KC. I thought that was a really good way to approach this for KC's point of view as well, because we came out of the first two episodes and it is a TV show, and it reminded us of the drama and maybe a little bit of the dysfunction as well that kind of was surrounding that dynasty. And that's human nature. It's sports talk radio. It's the way we look at conflict. But this was also a celebration of six championships in 8 years. And why are we looking back? Is because that's never going to be matched again. And it was the greatest decade in Chicago sports history. And it redefined how we look at sports teams in this city, because it returned, you know, it set a standard. And I'm not sure any team in town has really lived up to that consistency. Even the Blackhawks, we talk about them winning three since 2010. It's not six and eight. And I think that when you look at the greatness that era defined and it reflected, boy, you know, Tony Kukoc has a good point. It should be more a celebration of basketball. We're going to figure out by the end of this, and we already kind of know, you know, who is going to be blamed. There has to be a villain for every hero. So that's kind of expected. I hope that by the end, people take a step back and are able to continue to, you know, savor the success that those Bulls teams had and how much it did sort of change everything in Chicago, and it kind of restored some of the it was just so much fun. And you know, when you look at the championships in town before 1991, you know, and the image and how it sort of changed because of that. Yeah, good for Tony Kukoc for making that point, because that's something we all probably need to remember.
Yeah, Michael was 35 in the last dance, and Dennis Rodman was 37. Is that accurate?
Wow.
I mean, it's crazy how I mean, that is extraordinary that those guys are still able to do what they did in the second go round there, the second of the three-peats, because of the age of that team. That was not a young team by any stretch of the imagination. So I think what Kukoc says there, the idea of making it more of a celebration of basketball and not, you know, who's guilty or to blame. The problem is there's no way, that team was so complicated. The personalities were so amazing. I mean, I can't wait to see the next episode, which will focus on Rodman, and, you know, we'll see some of the bad boy stuff, right? You would imagine with Rodman, that's a hook. We'll see him with the Rich family and the whole way that thing broke down. I don't believe he's in contact with them anymore. I read something where one of the sons died. I think it was Michael Rich who died, and they never heard from Rodman at all. Not even, he didn't make a phone call to him, nothing. So that's kind of weird to me. You worry about a guy like Rodman, and I think you'll see all the reasons that you worry about him in this next episode. It's just an extraordinary group of players, and it was just an amazing, amazing time. And I suppose you can appreciate all the basketball and still wonder who is to blame or why it had to happen the way it happened or what the hurry was to move on. It's pretty, you know, it's very difficult. If they had brought everyone back and tried to do it again, could they have, right? I mean, the idea, and they've said that quite often, that Phil, when he wrote that, The Last Dance, if you look at the thing he's holding up, there's a question mark behind it, right? Last Dance? Mm-hmm. It's not The Last Dance. It's not, this is it, here we go. It's, there's a possibility we're all going to be out of here. And I think everybody knew that anyway going in. But it's you know, it is a celebration of basketball, and you can still blame. I think both things are possible.
Yeah, I agree. I think both things are possible. I think after this series concludes, and yeah, I'm also champing at the bit to get to the next episode on Sunday night, the next two episodes, I should say. I think you can have it both ways. You know, we're going to look back at this, and we're all going to be really nostalgic, and we're going to say, wow, that was awesome. We're never going to see anything like that again. What a great team. So many great players and this and that. And you can say that, but at the same time, there will always be, even if it's not technically a villain, there will be people that are perceived as the villains here. And whether that is Jerry Krause or Jerry Reinsdorf or Michael himself or Scotty, who's been taking some flack after the first couple episodes, people are going to find topics to criticize others about no matter what, you know, despite the fact that this is the greatest dynasty in the history of this city and maybe the greatest one in NBA history. There will always be, yes, people perceived as villains and slights and character flaws and this and that. So it will be both. It'll be a celebration of basketball and of the Bulls, but people will have their issues with some of the cast of characters.
It has to be both, because what we witnessed during those six championships, during that run, and what we're seeing in The Last Dance is legendary. And, you know, it has to be both, because, you know, it's not a happy ending, unfortunately. Yes, there was success, but when you cut ties with your, you know, your most successful coach that you've ever had in the franchise, and therefore alienate your star player and the best player to ever grace the courts in the NBA, then that's a tragedy right there. So, you know, it's a little bit of both. It's a celebration, but, you know, we're seeing something that was cut short. You didn't have to cut ties with Phil Jackson over pettiness, and you maybe could have had Michael Jordan for a couple more years. Who knows how it would have turned out? But Michael Jordan, in The Last Dance, in the first episode, said he had the right to defend the title. The Bulls had the right to defend the title until they lose it, and I totally buy into that.
I agree with that too, Ray. I think the Jordan Bulls should have had the chance to lose it, but would that, we give LeBron crap, or at least I give LeBron crap, because he's gone to the finals and lost. I mean, a big part of Jordan being the GOAT is that every time he went to the finals, he won the finals. Isn't that a big part of it, 6-for-6? Every time he went, he won, never lost. That's a big part of it. So I think if you would have lost at some point, and when these guys, when this team did break up, these guys were not very good in other places. They weren't. They just weren't. But I agree with Tony. I hope that all 10 episodes don't have a villain, don't have a heel. I mean, if the villain is the Pistons, that's fine. They were not good people. They did not handle losing to the Bulls well. But I don't think it has to be. I mean, you do have to have both things at some point through the 10 episodes. But if every single story, if you think of each episode as a story, has to have a heel, I'm not sure I want to watch that type of story 10 Sundays in a row or 5 Sundays in a row, 2 times a Sunday.
That's a great question.
Since Michael Jordan's last dance in 1998, who has been the most outstanding Chicago athlete worthy of a documentary?
There hasn't been anyone. There has not been, and this is with all due respect to, you know, the closest thing to it is Taves and Kane, right? You could do a Blackhawks thing. That is the closest thing to it. If you did a documentary on Brian Urlacher, you may as well do one on Ryne Sandberg. It just isn't going to rivet anyone or pull everybody in and make you feel like this is the most dynamic personality in sports history. Michael, it's a 5-man game. He's the best ever at the position in the game. And I think when you look at it in those terms, his dominance is just extraordinary. And then the cast of characters that he was surrounded by, just amazing when you think about Phil Jackson and what he went on to do in his career, and Steve Kerr and what he went on to do, and how good Pippen was, and Rodman, that extraordinary story from NAIA to the Bad Boys to playing with a guy like Pippen, who he once, you know, fouled so badly, Pippen has a scar under his chin from it. So I think that Luke Longley is not going to be a big part of this story. I think he's the first Australian ever to play in the NBA. I would imagine he's a big deal in Australia. And, you know, there was just so many different elements to it that I think it's extraordinary. I don't know that you could get that out of the Blackhawks. And I think Kaner has obviously had some missteps, and there were plenty of things out there on him that would make it interesting, but I'm not sure I want to see it. Taves are phenomenal, right? Jonathan Taves, one of the all-timers, and I think that you add that group up, maybe a documentary on that, but we've kind of seen it. They're kind of been open a little bit. It's not like there is secret footage that we don't know about. Honestly, I hate to do it because I know it's not the point of the exercise, but, you know, do you want to watch a Brian Urlacher documentary, a Chris Bryant documentary? I'm not there yet. So I think the dominance of the personality and the position he had in the sport and the game itself, which one player can take over, I don't know that we'd ever see anything like this again.
Well, there's Michael and there's everybody else. I think that goes without saying almost when you look at this. But I think if you're looking at the most outstanding Chicago athlete worthy of a documentary since 98, I mean, asterisk and everything, you have to look at Sammy Sosa. That would be a fascinating look if you really got behind the curtain and you really got some honesty and some transparency, which I don't think is possible when you're talking about Sammy Sosa. But I would watch that. I would watch probably 10 parts of that, because there might be 10 parts. There are a lot of layers there. But overall, the athletic, outstanding athletic career, you'd have to look at Patrick Kane, and I think that there would be some elements there, but it wouldn't appeal to as wide of an audience. We're talking about hockey here, and as much as I love it, I know that not everybody does. Urlacher, yeah, rags to riches, New Mexico to Canton, there's a lot there. But I agree with you, Molly. I'm not sure that it would appeal to as wide of an audience. Chris Bryant has an opportunity. Also, you know, hey, Jay Cutler's got his own reality TV show. I don't know if he would be that good in a documentary, from Santa Claus to, you know, very Cavallari. Derrick Rose already had a documentary, and that was fascinating. And I think that would be, in terms of just compelling stuff, Derrick Rose probably is every bit as compelling. But certainly there's Michael Jordan and there's everybody else.
I would have said Derrick Rose as well, but we did already get that documentary. It was very well done, but you're right, David. You can't compare Derrick to Michael, or you can't compare anybody to Michael. So anybody else that you look at here in terms of of a deep dive or a documentary or anything like that, it's not going to be at that same level. I think a Sammy Sosa documentary that kind of covers the whole 98, home run hitting contest with Mark McGwire and the steroid stuff and the cork bat and his departure from Chicago and all of the weird stuff that's been going on with Sammy after he retired. I think that even for me as a White Sox fan, I think that could be very, very fascinating.
Yeah, that was on my list of two, Derrick Rose and Sammy Sosa. Unfortunately, we've just been so after this, the Last Dance season from the Bulls, we've just been kind of starved for, other than, you know, the Blackhawks championships, of course, and the Cubs World Series, and the White Sox won World Series. We've kind of been starved for a sustained success in regards to winning championships. So, yeah, I'd say I'd put the vote in for the Sammy Sosa documentary.
I would say Sosa or Kaner. I know nobody's shocked that I'm going to say Sosa. But the Kane thing, what I'm interested in is how close did it get to, like, his career being ruined after what happened or whatever went on back at home in Buffalo that summer? Mm-hmm. Like, how close was it? You know, can we ever find out? Like, I mean, imagine if he would have been thrown out of the league or went to jail or thrown out of the NHL. I mean, wow, you talk about a rise and a fall. And how did he rebound and what was the support group? I would be fascinated by a Kane documentary. It's 6 o'clock, so I got to stop.
Okay, 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.